This is the Hockey Podcast Network, your home for hockey talk on every team in the NHL.
This is the Broadway Boys Podcast through the Hockey Podcast Network, and Andy and I are back with Season 2, Episode 2, bringing you a little joy to the World Junior Championships 2021, starting Christmas Day. Andy, it's now, we are in the month of the World Juniors, there's hockey on the horizon. How's everything going?
It's going all right. On our last podcast, we spoke about the holdup with announcing the next NHL season, and obviously, in the back of my mind, I've known that even if January 1st, which now seems very unlikely, I'd at least have the World Juniors coming. So that this time of year, I'm in the World Juniors mood. I probably pay a little bit closer attention to the World Juniors than I do the regular NHL season, because it's still December and, you know, things don't really get serious until after the new year. My interest is really there when the season traditionally starts in early October. And then, kind of around Christmas times, it just seems like those are the players' interest wanes a little bit. So, but then World Juniors is there. So I love it. You know, like you said, perfect compliment to Christmas time. Obviously, like everything else, it's a little bit different this year, but they have a bubble. And knowing that the NHL bubble went off without a hitch, that I'm hopeful that I'll get to watch hockey unimpeded.
Yeah, no, there was a little hiccup. I think Team Canada had a little bit of an outbreak. They're on a 2-week quarantine status right now. Is there any update with that?
No, I think so. I forget which day they went in. I think they should at least be close to, I think they might have another 4 or 5 days, but I think they've already quarantined for over a week. A little bit of a hiccup, like you said. A lot of them are kids. They didn't release who it was, and you know, it would also feel scummy if you did that. It's not like you're an NHL player, but I think they're still quarantining, which stinks, because they were having scrimmages which were being streamed, which was great to watch, to see, just to to get to watch hockey. But so they're finishing. Team USA, they already had a mini camp sometime, I think it was like a month ago, so now they just kind of named their preliminary roster, which I assume will still eventually get whittled down to. But it's like that's starting to gear up, so I'm getting excited for that. I don't know how Canada going into quarantine is going to affect, if we're not going to be able to, you know, see any more scrimmages, or if what the exhibition schedule is. I don't have that information yet. It might be out there, I just haven't seen it. But still excited. And obviously with the Rangers, the last few seasons with them rebuilding and stockpiling their prospect pipeline, they've really have had more of a presence at these tournaments the last few years. So
I'm sure we'll get into it. It makes like the random games that you're watching, knowing that there's a prospect, you know, you start really pulling for those teams, and it just makes the whole tournament a lot more fun to watch. And to go back to the NHL kind of being, I'd say, not locked out, but it seems like that's the road that they're heading down. I saw that a few tweets that the NHL isn't allowed to technically lock down, so there has to be a season, right?
Well, yeah. So you have, you know, it was being floated to the media by some of the owners, and I think the NHL, the league, you know, shadow figures in the league, that they could somehow invoke like a force majeure to because of like COVID as a circumstances is an unforeseen catastrophic circumstance that they could use. But then Alan Walsh, who we all know for the player agent extraordinaire, who we've known for taking the Marc-Andre Fleury with the sword through him with whoever it was, DeBoer's name on it. He tweeted out his counter to that, and that the league couldn't do that. And that, the more I've dug into this since our last episode, I really do think that Gary Bettman, and I won't come to his defense often, I do think he's in a rock and a hard place, because I think he knows that they need to burn this year off for the TV contract, renegotiate, because if it gets pushed for whatever reason, next season, they're going to, I think their contract would lapse at the same time as the NFL. And I think a few other leagues, I'm not sure. So you don't want to, you don't want them in the market for a new contract. Exactly. If you want to get, you know, maximum money on your return. And yeah, I just think that another issue is apparently an added, I don't want to say an added wrinkle, but a part of it is that because it is, you know, escrow, it's the belief is that obviously the players will get their money. It's just about when and how far down the road. And I think there's an element to it is if anything, the players could get their money sooner rather than later, but end up owing the owners more money than they would be comfortable with down the road. So it's almost like there's an element of Gary seeing a problem, like the players are going to be down the road. They're going to owe the league back, you know, some more than anticipated, and that's going to cause strife down the road. So there's an element of that, but it sounds like both sides are talking again. That's still an issue, but they've been floating schedules. We've heard they've been floating a 46 game season or something like that, which would start January 15th with training camps opening on the first. So 2 weeks of training camp, Brian Burke was on Sportsnet and TSN and a few others, and he was saying that the players really don't want to give up their Christmases with their families, and that's a hard, you know, that was the one thing that would make that January 1st always kind of seem like a pipe dream, because they're going to stay for Christmas, and then if you're going to travel, especially if you're, you know, live in the States or playing a Canadian team, you still have to then quarantine for 2 weeks. So that was making January 1st no matter what, and they refused to give it up. But if it starts January 15th, you have Christmas with your families, and then you travel to your respective cities. You do what you have to do. You know, different places have different, you know, I think in Canada, especially in like British Columbia, they moved it from like 10 days to like 7 days or something like that. So instead of a full 2 weeks where other places that are really bad. So yeah, it's just, it gives everyone enough time, especially it sounds like things are cooling down a little bit. I do still, I think there will definitely be a season. I think it will start January 15th. They do have to figure out, you know, if I'm the players, I think it's just about, they have to get something for this, you know, even if they're going to, I think eventually they will agree to that increased cap on the, or, you know, the escrow cap. But I do think they should use this as bargaining power while they have it to get something else that they need. And I don't know what that would be particularly, but I think they've never had this much leverage in their life, and they always lose every labor negotiation with Gary, and this is the first time they've had leverage, and they'd be really stupid not to use it, because if the revolts were reversed, the league would absolutely hammer the players right now.
Yeah,
and the players would just take it. So
right, and to be honest, there really isn't that big of a difference between a January 1st and a January 15th start date. I mean, unless you're really cutting a ton of games off the season. So you said 46 game season.
I think it was being floated. I could probably find the tweet.
Is there expanded playoffs?
It's not mentioned yet. Gary Bettman has been on record saying he hates expanded playoffs.
It generates more TV and more revenue if you
expand. Yeah, I never understood that, because I think he was on a panel with Adam Silver, and Adam Silver, you know, from the NBA was like, oh, we think it's great. Like we definitely, you know, but Gary has been, you know, he's a little bit more old school, and I, you know, it's for better or for worse. I mean, you know, there's some people that think that it's time the NHL has like ads on jerseys, and some people that think it's sacrilege. And Gary has, you know, always been like, well, if we're going to have expanded playoffs and if we're going to have like ads on jerseys, like these things like really need to be worth our while. It has to be like an eye popping attention, you know, or just at least the money has to be good enough to warrant like putting a logo on a jersey, or, you know, even the revenue to like, he has a little bit of old school sanctity of the game in him. So,
yeah,
but
well,
I
not
agree.
Permanently expand the playoffs forever. I mean, this season is a little bit special, and if teams are coming back, you want that 46 games to be as meaningful as possible for everyone. And if you can get the bottom teams fighting for a playoff spot towards the end, it just will drive ratings, and the expanded playoffs will just drive more ad dollars.
Yeah.
Ultimately, at the end, is what you're
I was off by 10. It was 50. You see, it was like 52 to 56 game season.
Okay,
is what they're looking at apparently.
Yeah, which,
sorry, that was my
yeah, which makes sense, because
I just
starting...
know.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, is that they have the Summer Olympics. They have to make sure they can get the playoffs completed by, because NBC will, you know, pull all their resources basically. So,
yeah. And, you know, and truthfully, you don't need that. You don't need a full 82 games. Like, that would just be insane to try to pull off when you're starting in January, especially if you're going to want to get the following season on track to start in the fall. And, you know, and hopefully things are a lot better then. So it'll be a lot smoother and you know, it'll just be a better environment to be, you know, working in. So if you want next season to start in the fall, you got to shorten the season, expand the playoffs, make it a little bit more fun. And yeah, it just makes it a lot more interesting when everyone has a shot at the playoffs this year. And, you know, everyone's playing meaningful hockey, because ultimately that's what you want out of the season anyway.
No, you're absolutely right. And to your point, I think Gary and, you know, most of the people at the league understand that with between renegotiating the US TV deal, getting starting next season on time is going to be important, especially to get for these owners to recoup some money, you know, especially with that new TV deal in place. And just the more you say, all right, well, we're going to go shorten this, but we don't want to go. So then we're going to shorten next season a little bit. Like, you know, yes, this like this season, you need to get it just needs to go happen in whatever capacity it does. And yes, it might sting. But if you can, I think right now, at least saying that being able to have people in the stands next October is not an unreasonable ask. Yeah. You know, even if there's some places that aren't 100% there yet, and there's different, I think obviously people will be able to be there in some capacity. And if not, things have gone horribly wrong. We have bigger problems, you know,
right. I mean, I know
specifically.
Yeah. I know, Dr. Fauci said, was asked about the NFL season and fans possibly being in the stadiums next fall. And he said like, yeah, I mean, that's like definitely a realistic goal and not crazy at all. And like, he would bet money that there would be fans back in the seats. So I would imagine the NFL is going to drive the fan situation first. Like, you'll see, because they play mostly outdoors. So those situations will be, you know, will kind of lead then to the indoor facilities such as basketball and hockey. If that makes any sense. So you'll see NFL first, and then I think the other sports will follow suit.
Yeah, exactly. So, and you'd have to imagine that if enough people can, as this vaccine rolls out in the next 6 months, the more people that take it earlier, the better herd immunity could potentially help take over some at some point in the tail end of that 6 month window. But yeah, it's like you said, it's going to be dictated by the NFL, and then probably to the lesser extent the NBA, just because they seem to always, you know. I give the NHL full marks for completing their season, you know, and the NBA for, especially with no positives. But yeah, I think going forward, especially with this last little wrinkle, it's become too much. This whole situation has become too big for them to dictate. So I think they're comfortable with the fact that they pulled that off. And now I think they're going to let medical science and things just dictate everything else from here on out, instead of sticking their neck out, especially with how caustic and tenuous situations have been, you know, with this negotiation, you know?
Yeah. And also it's a bad look, kind of, don't you think? It's a bad look for the NHL, considering that the NBA seemed to have no problem. You know, there was a little hiccup maybe with LeBron James saying he didn't like when the NBA was starting, but ultimately they got the job done. They're going to start. They seem to have it down and ready to go. And they're starting Christmas Day as well.
I'm not 100% sure, but I think so. It's around then. I saw the Knicks posted their schedule the other night, but I assume it's around. I thought I saw like a game on, I forget what day it was, but yeah, I assume it's starting around Christmas time, probably around sometime around the 20th, towards the end of the month. But yeah, I mean, the NBA is a league that smartly understands, like, yes, if we cater to our players, like, in the long term, it is better for the overall growth and revenue of the, you know, you keep your players happy. And that's the other thing, is that every time there's an all-star game, you have NBA players that didn't even make it, or like, oh, I want to go sit in the stands, or I want to go to the dunk contest. And like, I just want to go be there. I want to be, have my face on TV. Meanwhile, like guys are trying to, in the NHL are trying to concoct like fake injuries so they don't have to go to the All-Star game. It's like, oh, I pulled my groin playing with my kid. I can't go to the All-Star game because like, you know, the league has never catered to them ever. And it's made that readily apparent. So they're like, yeah, why am I going to go out on a limb and like, you know, try to, yeah, it just, I think the league needs to understand that, or the owners, maybe I shouldn't say the league so much. I think they do understand it, but the owners need to understand that if they seem to like the system where the players have bought into this whole like we over I thing, you know, the name on the front's more important than the name on the back. Like I get it, but at the same time, you know, the players buy into this, but then when it comes time for, they get hammered in every CBA negotiation and they're always, you know, arguing for the people at the top of the, you know, they're, every negotiation is geared towards the guy who already got his money and never like the, you know, the journeyman on those entry level contracts who are pissed and make up most of the voting power. So yeah, again, that's a whole other podcast, but
right.
Yeah,
no, think, absolutely.
Sorry. What say.
No. And I was just going to, you know, start to transition over to the World Juniors. I mean, you look at the NHL, they pretty much have to have a season. I'm not too worried about it. I knew it wasn't going to be January 1st. I called it out last podcast and I said, there's no way January 1st is going to happen. It's too quick. It's already December. And, you know, at the same time too, it's like, there is no reason to rush these things. Like let it happen. It's going to happen. I'm thinking, you know, late January, early February, you'll start. Hopefully it's January 15th. I'm still pessimistic that it's not going to happen on January 15th, but you know, we'll see. I do think though, now that the transition here, that's a good thing that the Rangers are keeping their young baby stars on the New York Rangers roster under the New York Rangers wing and bubble and allowing them to, you know, basically get experience playing with the big boys and not going to play in the World Junior Championships, though, which would be exciting to watch them. I think ultimately down the road, it's a very good thing that they're not going.
Yeah. I mean, it comes out in the last, I think it was sometime middle of last week that, you know, it's announced that Kako is not going for Finland. Makes total sense to me because he wins goal at the tournament. Wasn't the MVP, but he still had like 5 points. So he still had a good showing. He's already then he skipped that was 2 seasons ago. Cause then he didn't go to the last World Juniors because he played in the World Championships and he won gold there. And he was arguably Team Finland's best player. So, and then he's already played a full NHL season. So unlike maybe a Kirby Doc who, although was Doc hurt last year for Team Canada? I can't remember.
I might have been hurt. I don't really remember him, but I also, especially with Kako, you know, not to go back and start changing the subject back to Kako, but with Kako and the New York Rangers, I really think like he's a bona fide NHL player now, and he's going to be looked to be playing a top six position for the New York Rangers. You know, this is kind of beneath him to play at the World Juniors. I thought the only player in question was Lafreniere, and even him, I feel like, is there anything to prove? And you had a really good tweet, discussing, you know, Lafreniere's eligibility and whether it's smart for him to go, and is it worth it? Like, what are they actually going to get out of it besides repetitions? And repetitions are important, don't get me wrong. And I've said this, that, you know, even if they did went, there's a lot to benefit from that. But ultimately, is there any benefit of them going in terms of individual success?
No, I mean, and I don't think so. I mean, right now he's in Westchester. He's in New York. He's training with Keandre Miller and a few other guys or Rangers who have gotten there to town early. I'm sure Chris Kreider's on the ice with them. Like, he's got his eye set. Like I said, in the tweet, I tweeted out that, like, as disappointing as it's that we don't get to watch, you know, Lafreniere dummy yet another junior tournament, you know, that was a mic drop from him. He wins tournament MVP. He gets hurt, which is obviously a concern going into his first NHL season, still comes back and still, like, you know, leads the way to gold for Team Canada. He doesn't have anything else to prove there, just like Kako. So, you know, what's best case scenario is he maybe gets his help. It helps him get his legs under him potentially playing against, you know, but worst case scenario, he either A, gets hurt, B, he doesn't take it too seriously, and maybe he, for whatever reason, doesn't struggle, just doesn't, the points don't flow. And now maybe it makes him, there is some chatter around like, oh, well, he didn't really, you know, he wasn't really dominant. Like, is he ready for his first NHL season? Then he has to contend with that type of mental,
and especially with New York media. You know, it's a little,
Yeah, it's unacceptable, you know, and yeah, so that's worst case scenario. So I like the fact that, you know, he's got his, literally he's 100% focused on his next goal, which is stepping into the National Hockey League. He's never, no other, I think the only, I'm trying to think of, Ovechkin was like one of the only first overalls, and Yakupov, but they had lockouts, which I think was the only reason they were even playing in the World Juniors, in their D after getting drafted first overall. Like, yeah, it's just, you know, he's clearly ready for the NHL. Just set your eyes on the future. Just forget about that. Doc is probably, now what we know that, like, he's practicing with them, he'll probably end up getting recalled. He might not even see the ice. We don't know. He might play the first couple of games, but once training camp starts, he's probably gone. Like, you know, so it just does. Yeah, it's just too much to lose, too much to risk.
And there's nothing really. So even if, you know, Lafreniere goes and he dominates, it's expected. So there's not going to be as much hype, you know, if he, you know, puts up 15, 20 points, even, you know, in seven games, I think, total that you play. So, yeah. And he had he played five games. He missed two games last year. And I think he had 10 points, which is, I think he had the highest point per game average there. So it's just, he's already been there, done that. Now he has to dominate. The pressure is all on him to dominate. And again, he's going to get crushed by New York Ranger fans, the New York Rangers media. There's going to be question marks all over him. He doesn't need to see any of that before he steps on the ice. Even for a training camp with the New York Rangers, he'll have all these questions about him. I also think it's the same thing goes for Kako. I mean, again, there's no reason for him to go other than repetitions. And, you know, I think they'll get that playing, playing with the fellow New York Rangers.
No, exactly. And even I'd go so far even to say Jack Hughes, Jack Hughes and Doc, for that matter, both of them. Like, I guess I can understand their position with Doc in that he hasn't, you know, I mean, both him and Kako were in the play-ins, but Chicago actually went farther than the Rangers, so he even got a little bit more playing time. I guess I get it. You know, he was in the NHL last season, so he didn't play in the World Juniors, but, you know, it's not like, yeah, it's just he didn't have that moment, that, you know, that dominating moment. So maybe they just thought it'd be a good way for him to shake off rust. You know, he's from Canada. I think that makes a difference if he was going to be there anyway. They weren't asking him to come from either the US and be away from his family during COVID or from a European country. So I get it, but he's most likely going to get summoned back the second it's time to report for training camp.
And I also don't think there's the pressure under Doc.
No. If Doc doesn't
dominate, I don't think people are going to question him because of what he did last season. You know, yeah. I do think there's bigger question marks with Kako if he didn't play as well than Kirby Doc.
Oh, exactly. You know, and like I said, Doc, even though if you look at the stat line for Doc, Kako and Hughes, for the most part, it was similar in the regular season. You know, Doc was actually pretty good in the postseason. So I'd say he's kind of ahead of the other two by a little bit right now, but you know, he's already physically mature and he's already played the North American game. It didn't have the same, but obviously the Kako we saw in that three game segment looked really good. It's just
very good.
The Rangers as a whole struggled mightily. They scored what, maybe five goals So it's like, that's another podcast, but yeah, listen, it's the good news for these Wunderkinds not getting invited is that it leads time for some of these other guys to step up. You know, they're not going to lose ice time out. The World Juniors does a lot to boost your stock, even though maybe it technically shouldn't, if you think about it in terms of just weighing prospects, but now you look that whoever ends up, you know, if a Connor McMichael or some of the guys who just got drafted, you know, Cole Perfetti will be there and Connor Zary will be there for Team Canada. And now especially the U.S. team, some of the guys returning from that team, you know, so it's like, yeah, now these guys get to be step up and be the man. And yeah, so which I it's ultimately I think is a good thing, because I think they have more to gain from this tournament than a Doc or a Kako or Hughes or Lafreniere. So, which is why I'm excited for the Rangers that did have made these rosters and that are invited to go.
All right. So let's get into that, because I know you're a huge prospect guy. So ultimately, when you see some of the Rangers prospects in this tournament, what are you looking for in terms of their game? What are you looking for in terms of, you know, how they're playing with, like, you know, their other teammates that are also, you know, hyped up to be NHL, you know, future NHL stars. So give us like your top three players that you're looking for, and what do you expect out of them going into this tournament?
So it's funny. I think for each player, I kind of going into this tournament, I kind of with their performance, I weigh where they were drafted, what their expectations are, how they've performed as of late. So, for example, Team Canada has the most New York Rangers invited, but, you know, by a good margin, because they have, you know, Braden Schneider, who we just drafted. What was that? 19th overall? Yeah, 17th overall, whatever. We just drafted Matthew Robertson, who we drafted in the second round last year. And then Dylan Garand, who is a goaltender we drafted this season. So you could argue, starting with Garand, you could argue that goaltending is probably Canada's most nebulous position. It's the only kind of unknown, because on paper, the forwards and the defense are stacked. They're spoiled for choice. You know, this is excluding, you know, Lafreniere not going and maybe Doc getting recalled. You still have Dylan Cousins, who, you know, is probably going to break through soon for the Sabres, and Connor McMichael. And like I said, Cole Perfetti might end up, and guys like Jarvis and Perfetti might play on like lower lines for them. That's how good they are. So like for Garand, I think there's a chance he can win that starter spot. You know, he's the smallest of the three goalies, but he was excellent last year. And I just, from watching the scrimmages, like they were splitting time, but he looked very sharp. So I think that's a winnable position for him. So I'd like to see him maybe try to cement that starting spot for himself. That would be good for me. Matthew Robertson, here's the problem, is that they're between Bowen Byram and Jamie Drysdale, and even a guy like, you know, Schneider. Like, I feel like Robertson is the one guy who might not see a lot of playing time if he, you know, doesn't get cut some, once they cut down this roster. If he might not make it to the final roster, and there's a chance that even if he does, he might only in a, you know, seventh defenseman or an extra defenseman type position, because I feel like they're kind of spoiled for choice, because they have bruisers, you know, or maybe more traditional big shutdown guys like him and Schneider, you know, and but then at the same time, like I said, you have so many smaller skilled guys like Byram and Drysdale that you're trying to take spots from, you know, and you only technically have six guys on the ice, you know, for a given game. So I expect Schneider to make it. He has a history with Team Canada. I think they like the mix he brings, and that he's probably the most physical defender they have, but he can also skate. I know they like that. Schneider, I'm going to be watching pretty intently. And for me, you know, especially at this stage, I want to see him, you know, I would like to see him. I'm going to be focused a little bit more on his two-way game. Cause I already know he should at least physically be able to snuff out chances in his own end and, you know, defend the house and all that. But I do want to see that. I think this is the time for him to kind of round out the transition game before he gets to the NHL, you know, because when it's obviously easy to revert to that and not try to take chances. But I think if you want to maximize your potential on taking a player like him, you have to hope that he can Ryan Lindgren, who we see and we like, oh, he's actually more mobile than I thought, and he can actually skate it up the ice way if he needs to, like those type of things. Those are the things I'm looking for with him.
Hello and welcome. My name is Brad Lieb. I am a former professional hockey player, and this is the Life After Hockey podcast. This is the place where I'll be interviewing former players and exploring their life after hockey journeys, including their successes, challenges, and the causes that they are passionate about. So please join me on the Hockey Podcast Network every Saturday for new episodes, and follow me on Twitter at Brad M. Lieb for all my podcast updates. And until then, keep going and enjoy your life.
Yeah. So what kind of player do you want to see Schneider paired up with? You know, if he's going to be focusing on that two-way game, what kind of defenseman would you like to see him paired up with? And so basically to really extract the best, you know, Brandon Schneider that, you know, there is. I butchered that. Whoa.
Yeah. So I'm kind of two minds on that, because on the one hand, it's like, yeah, on the one hand, Schneider, I said I wanted to maximize that. So you would think traditionally, even though he's mobile guy, you would put him with a guy who is a little bit more, just a little bit like, even though he's mobile, he's still more of an old school shutdown guy. So you would maybe put him with a Drysdale who's a little bit, who can skate, or even a Bowen Byram. If Schneider's right-hand shot playing on the right. Yeah, so you'd probably be with a Bowen Byram. But at the same time, it's like, if I'm looking to, I think he can skate. You know, he maybe, you could argue that he needs to get a little bit more explosive, or, you know, his lateral mobility needs to get better because he's good in forwards and backwards, but maybe just in terms of quicker transitions and you know, starting the puck up the ice and, you know, escapability, I want to see him work on that. So if anything, there's a part of me that would almost want to see him, even if it meant playing on a third pairing instead of a second pairing, but if he was doing more of the skating legwork, I think I would see that, because I think from a development standpoint, that's probably, it's probably a little bit more I think that's a little bit more important right now for this tournament. I think if anything, you know, I have a strange feeling, but I think Byram and Drysdale are going to get a lot of ice time. So the other defensemen will penalty killing. He's going to be getting top minutes killing penalties. So I'll definitely, but that's the thing, is that we know that he's been selected for his, probably for the fact that he is a little bit safer option. I'm sure Team Canada, highly, they covet that, and they also covet his physical abilities, you know, abilities to snuff out chances, close people off, because, you know, the other teams aren't slouches either. USA and Sweden, and even Russia for that matter. And Finland this year to a lesser extent, but they wouldn't have a guy like Lundell. So yeah, listen, there's still gonna be some dangerous players on the ice, even though I kind of consider Canada not to be a heavy favorite, but they are the favorite in my eyes.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. And, you know, also too, with Schneider, you know, I think it's important for him to like go in and not being a first round draft pick. I always feel like there's a spotlight on you, you know, even watching the game, they do highlight, you know, where players were taken, you know, by what team they were taken. I think it's important for him not to feel like that he has to go out and absolutely dominate this tournament, you know, just kind of stick to his game. If he's going to be one of those defensive style players in the NHL, to kind of work on that, because, you know, that is really where his bread and butter will be made, you know, at the next level.
No, I absolutely agree. And I think that's the freeing thing about that, is that he doesn't have to show the same thing that with Bowen Byram or Drysdale, you know, for Anaheim. It's like they're expecting these guys to literally take over games, you know, because they're just because their talent level, you know, Byram especially is, you know, ready to kind of kick down the door and, you know, enter the NHL. I would assume he will play for Colorado this upcoming season, you know, but after the World Juniors, or at some point, depending on what's going on, you know, with his junior team. But it's like you said, the expectation for him is just to do what he's always done, mm-hmm. which is why for me, I would almost like to see him buck that a little bit, and just, I want him to see if we can see a little bit more offense out of him. That would make me happy, because there's no guarantee it will be available to him at the next level, but the more confidence is everything. And if he feels like he can still be, if he can use this as an opportunity, especially because he hasn't played in so long,
right?
If he can use this as an opportunity to connect those little neurons that say, like, in this situation, yes, I traditionally would fling the puck up the boards, or, you know, whatever, make a bang pass or hit a guy going up the middle. and just start the breakout and then I'm done. But at the same time, it's like there's a little ice and I know I can hit this guy here, and then maybe this guy's streaking up on the far side. I can then have that passing that lane will be open to make that pass. So yeah, those type of things. And you know, he strikes me very much like a Trouba, that he's like a field defenseman, that he kind of feels out games as he goes along. It's not so much he's like going to dictate from the start. He kind of settles in and then he can exploit when there's gaps there. You know, I don't think he doesn't think the game well enough to open things up just at will. But at the same time, we have seen him score some surprisingly, you know, goals where you know, especially see a defenseman like him, you know, bearing it on the net, or jumping into play, or acting, or leading the rush sometimes is kind of a rare sight. So yeah, why not? Now's the time. You know what I mean? Especially if you now know you're like, you don't have to try to do that against a Kako or a Hughes, or, you know, so it's that's what I want to see out of him.
All right. Do we have any players playing against each other? Like any draft picks playing against each other? I don't know the divisions. I'm trying to actually like look that up right now, but you know, I do.
Oh, for that, like the blocks.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. I forgot to let me pull it up. World Junior blocks.
Yeah, I know they usually separate the heavies.
Yeah, so I don't think, because like I think the U.S. and Canada are in the same block. Let me see.
No, actually,
sorry. Make great. So you tell, if you found it, you let us know.
Yeah, no, they separated Canada and U.S. So it's right now. It's okay. Canada, Finland, Switzerland, Slovakia, Germany, Russia, Sweden, United States, Czech Republic, and Austria.
So as it stands, the only players that could potentially play against each other would be Brett Berard, if he makes US's, you know, if he doesn't get cut from the US team, would play Carl Henriksen, who will figure in pretty heavily for the Swedes it stands.
I mean, I have definitely Sweden coming out of that, of that group B. So they'll definitely do some sort of crossover. I'd love to see Sweden versus Canada, for my own selfish.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, honestly, I think that's as good as transition as any to talk about Brett Berard. I'm very happy he made. I didn't know if he was going to get selected, but, you know, playing for the U.S. National Development Program last season clearly helped his case. You know, I think, you know, he's probably going to most likely play on the bottom six. But I think of any prospect we have playing in this tournament, I think he has the most to gain, if that makes any sense, because...
Yeah.
I think right now, you know, whatever, when you're undersized and taking that late in a draft, but at the same time, you have there's a lot of low key buzz about your game. People like, oh, he's like such a good passer. His completion percentages is really high. He's one of, you know, his underlying numbers are amazing. And he uses teammates well, and he's feisty, and he's just a guy you want to naturally root for. Yeah, I think he can have a real eye opening this tournament. I don't think he's going to dominate, but at the same time, I think looking at Team USA, you know, that team as it's constructed right now maybe looks a little bit, they're not as you know, they're probably not as talented overall as Team Canada is, but they're no slouches in their own mind. And yeah, I think especially a player like him who uses his teammates so well and is so adaptable to pressure, and yeah, I think having a good transition game is really important in this tournament, especially because at certain points, just because, you know, they're, you know, with these younger teams, disciplined sometimes, they just kind of become run and gun sometimes, just back and forth chances. And I think that's definitely plays into his strengths, you know, especially in terms of his passing and transition abilities and his just his decision making. So I think Brett Berard can open a lot of eyes, you know, and factor in heavily. But at the same time, he could also get cut from that final roster. I'm not, you know, if you look over at Sweden, we have Carl Henriksen, who traditionally has played centered for the you know, those Swedish Terra Twins and Holtz and Raymond. But at the same time, I wouldn't be surprised if Holtz and Raymond got split up. I think you know, there's been talk about that. It wouldn't surprise me that they would maybe keep Henriksen playing with Lucas Raymond and Holtz just plays on the second line, or, you know, hell, even they might even reverse it. But he's a guy whose stock is a little bit lower right now, just because he's playing in the SHL, or he's trying to, you know, and he's been getting ice time. So the coach clearly trusts him with Frölunda. He's even played with Joel Lundqvist a bit, but on the wing, not at center. So yeah, I think there are people that doubt at his size whether he can stick at center and whether he can play for the Rangers down the line. So I think this will be a good tournament for him to at least show where he's at, you know, because he's as a winger right now against, you know, grown pros and grown men in the SHL. It's not really, the points aren't coming. And yeah, it's just he might be a little bit out of his depth a little bit, you know, not maybe not his brain, but just his skating and his just his ability to, you know, his strength. But against his peers, you should see a good, it should be easier for him, I should say, especially if you put him with a guy like Lucas Raymond, who is, after having a difficult start to his own SHL season last year, has looked much better this season.
Yeah, so I got a question for you, and this might sound really dumb, but
yeah,
are Kravtsov and Miller aged out, right? They're 20 years old right now, currently.
Yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to
Well,
make sure.
Yeah, so it's a U20 tournament.
But I think you can be 20,
yeah.
Right?
So, you can. I just think at this point, Miller was there last year, and I think Miller's a later birthday anyway. I just, he's like Lafreniere, he is most likely has his eyes set on the future. You know, I think for Team USA, they're really going to be looking for Jake Sanderson to step up in this tournament, you know, because he's, especially because for how high he went, and just he was such a rapid riser leading into the draft. So I mean, he's going to anchor that team. Yeah, I haven't, you know, I think it's just one of those things where even with the circumstance, it's, you see all these teams are reticent to send, even if any player who, you know, Kravtsov is currently in the middle of, he scored again the other day, you know, after a little bit of a cold streak. His team is one of the tops in their division in the KHL. They're a really good defensive unit. They're most likely going to be in the playoffs. And I don't think he wants to disrupt that. I think the Rangers are very happy with how he's doing, hence why they'll probably let him finish his season, you know, especially if they have a run to the playoffs where he is getting the most ice time of anyone on his team. And he's one of the top shots on goal leaders in the entire KHL. Like, I think they're happy with that, especially how the defensive leaps he's taken against pros. I don't think they know he can score. I don't think he's yet another guy who has nothing to gain from going and, you know, although I think he's properly aged out of that tournament, I believe. But I feel like last year we had a lot more prospects that were eligible, and we still have those who are eligible. But like you said, when you have Kako, two of your top draft picks are literally just too good for the tournament. That just kind of speaks to where the Rangers are at, that we're almost beyond having prospects in the tournament. We're at a point where our prospects have been there, done that. And that's, you know, that kind of just shows where the Rangers are at in terms of the development curve, in terms of them being contenders.
Yeah, and the ones that are there, there's really no pressure on them to absolutely dominate. We're not looking for them to dominate. Obviously, we root for them to dominate and do well and make a case for themselves to be contenders for the Rangers.
You could argue a kid like Hunter Skinner maybe could have or should have made Team USA, but, you know, he's an American that is an OHL commit, so that kind of hurts his stock. Because like Team Canada and, you know, the Team USA, there's politics with that in terms of committed to play. So, you know, through no fault of his own, or a kid like that. But that, like I said, that just, you know, the Rangers have, the fact that we have a presence in this tournament is great, you know, especially considering some of the other teams where you look and, you know, but I mean, it also at the same time, you look at some of the players that teams that are already good, like Colorado or Carolina, are going to have in this tournament. You know what I mean? So, yeah. And meanwhile, you look at a team like the Islanders; they don't have a lot of kids playing in this tournament. So, it's just one of those things. I think it shows the way the league is trending and how important it is to have a stock prospect pipeline. And this is the time. I think by the time this tournament's over, I think people might look at a Connor McMichael for Washington with a little bit more higher esteem, even though I think he should readily, you know, or a Bowen Byram, if he is flat out the best player in this tournament and every time he touches the ice, he's dominant, then yeah, his hype going into next season will probably be crazy, you know? So.
Yes. And you obviously said that there's, scrimmages and stuff going on. Where can, you know, our listeners, you know, find those scrimmages leading up to the tournament?
Now with the quarantine, I don't know what's going to happen. No, it's not a source. Team Canada was putting them on YouTube when they were done. So that's where I was watching them after the fact, you know, and at the time guys would tweet, you know, beat writers would tweet out what's happening. But as far as the tournament itself, watching it's dicey. It's on, they usually air the games, even exhibition games on the NHL network. So if you have the NHL network, great. If not, I don't know. Get you, Google's your friend. You can figure these things out. Not that I am condoning, but listen, you can figure it out. If you understand the internet in any sense, you'd be able to figure out how to watch these games no matter what.
Yeah, you know, Reddit's you're not illegally streaming the Super Bowl. I think you're safe with the World Junior Championships.
I think you'd be all right. And you know, it's fun because here on the Hockey Podcast Network, we love the World Juniors. Shane, who hosts Senzauer, and I usually try to put out some content around it where we'll do a proper primer. So that might actually happen in the next few weeks. Although obviously COVID is in the delay in the start of the NHL season has made things a bit tenuous, but we'll figure it out. We should have a proper primer, things to look for, favorites, talk about matchups. That should be fun. And yeah, we'll let, obviously on our official Twitter account at Broadway Boys Pod, as you can see right here, we'll be tweeting things out. So yeah, if you're a Rangers fan and you haven't traditionally watched the World Juniors, or you don't count yourself a prospect guy, well, this is the perfect time because you're not going to have hockey to watch, you know, unless maybe some things leak out from Rangers training camp or see guys, you know, trying to sweating it out a little bit on their Twitter account. And that's it. So yeah, this is great. And familiarize yourself with these guys now, because a lot of these guys are going to be, you know, lining up against Lafreniere and Kako and Mika and Panarin and in the future. So just have rooting interest in something, you know, Team USA, right? Like, I, with all the Rangers prospects playing for Team Canada, I'm going to root for USA always, but at the same time, it's like, I hope for a Canada US final and where Team USA pulls out in the gold medal game, but you know, I want to see Canada dummy this tournament. You know, I really do.
Yeah. And they're in different divisions to start the tournament. Exactly. So we can still root for Canada and not feel, you know, totally like we're abandoning the USA, but, it's an exciting tournament and I love watching it. And I love hearing, you know, your breakdown, because your in-depth analysis of all these prospects and the time you put into it so I don't go to anywhere. I'll ask you a question. If I have a question on a prospect, I don't go anywhere online. I ask you because you know what you're talking about, Andy. And I could listen to you talking about New York Rangers prospects and prospects across the league at that all day long.
Yeah, you know, a part of me with this tournament is a little, you know, because a lot of, like, let's say a kid like Owen Power, who was at some points has been potentially projected to go first overall, in the 2021 draft as a defenseman who plays for the University of Michigan. Like, he wasn't released to Team Canada, but you know, obviously he's playing games right now Michigan, and it's Team Canada is locked up in their hotel room, so it's kind of looking like maybe that was the right choice. Although I would have liked to have seen him at this tournament. A part of me is upset that we're not getting this, like, Kako and Lafreniere and Hughes and Doc staying the whole tournament and then just being like, you know, like Godzilla, you know, fighting Ghidorah or whatever, Rodan, like, type matchups, you know what I mean? But at the same time, this is such a great tournament because you don't have to really, you know, especially with, it's going to suck not having the crowd reaction, because you don't, just the hype, just look, just watching these games and not knowing anything, you get caught up no matter what, especially whenever it's Canada versus the USA. And just seeing, because these kids, like, some, for some of them, this is the end of the line. Like, this might be the highest they ever get. And when they score, you see the heartbreak, you see the joy when they score, and like, just, yeah, their enthusiasm is infectious because this is like the best times of their lives. And you know, this, they're looking to make their mark and take that next step. And yeah, even if they don't do anything else, they can be heroes. People talk, you know, people talk, still talk about, for USA, they talk about, Troy Terry in the shootout a few years ago, you know, and since then, you know, Troy Terry's an all right prospect, but he hasn't done much, but at the same time, he's going to be a hero forever. People still, people probably talk more about Jordan Eberle's junior career than they probably talk about his, you know, cause him and Tavares hooking up, in the World Junior, they still talk about that. So yeah, this, for some of these kids, this is as good as it's going to get. And no offense to Jordan Eberle, Isles fans, you know, pump the brakes, relax. He's a fine player, but yeah, man, like this is the hockey is a little bit immature and all over the place, and it, but it's great. You know, it's like it, sometimes it's wide open and you're like, why are you doing that? And teams are getting dummied. But at the same time, it's like when, you know, the swing, the goal swings are amazing. Like, you know, team, I don't know how many comebacks I've seen, like a team will be up by three goals, you know, going into the second period and then going in, you know, they ends up going to a shootout because like a team comes alive, scores one in the second and then scores another three and goes up. And then that team that was behind then scores another one and ties it up. And then it goes to, that happens all the time. Like,
right.
And that's just, and that, the beauty of this tournament.
And then even the games, especially for a gambler like myself, you get to, you know, watch the games, even the ones that are blowouts where it's like 9-0, you really do see the creativity of the kids that are truly elite, just absolutely dominating such a good level, good, you know, a quality hockey team. They're just dominating them. That's a little bit fun to watch too. I know, you know, obviously those games don't happen, you know, too often, but they do happen, and those are just fun to watch.
Yeah.
Also too, you made a great point about, you know, the enthusiasm and the energy level. I'm actually excited to watch these games with no fans, because these kids, if you ever been to like a youth hockey tournament, in the championship game, there's barely any fans in the building, but yet the energy is still there. And that's what you get. That's what you're going to get here. You don't need the fans to have the energy. I know it's a really cool aspect of it, but to watch these kids bring their own energy, bring their own life to the building is going to be another fun aspect to watch when watching this tournament.
Oh, 100%. Because even, you know, in the NHL, it's a, you act like you've been there before is kind of the mantra. So you'll see, even though it's, things have loosened up a little bit recently, but you know, in, what I love about the World Juniors is they could be, you know, dummying Latvia and they go up 6-0 off of a nice wrist shot. And the kid's like, you know, like, and yeah, like skating into the corner and they bang on the glass, you know, but, and that's, like you said, they, you're going to hear them wooing and cheering, well, each other on, and you're going to hear
goal
them
differential
saying, you know,
matters,
right boys,
you know. Oh yeah. I love that. And like goal differential matters. So, which is why it's fun to watch those, you know, blowouts, because teams are itching to get those goals. And I brought up the gambling aspect. You know, there are lines for these games, and it's pretty interesting to watch, you know, when Canada plays, you know, a team like Austria or something, and the line is 8 goals and it's 7-0 with 4 minutes left in the third period. And you're watching like it's do or die hockey, because you threw, you know, $25 on the game for Canada to cover. So it makes it a lot of fun. And, you know, just, there's nothing, you know, negative about this tournament. There's nothing that they can even do to make it better. It's just like a perfect hockey tournament. It's got life, it's got energy, it's got, you know, hope, it's everything. And you get to watch, you know, the most talented kids, you know, you get to watch the future of hockey play in a two week tournament. You know, it's only 7 games, but it feels like it's 3 months, because, you know, it's just so grueling, and you know, the hockey is just awesome. It's just awesome to watch.
Yeah, exactly. And as we wrap it up here, just to get people excited, Bauer has supplied some custom skates for the various countries. You'll look at these beauties, huh?
Oh my God. Is that like part of the skate, or is it like a sticker?
I think it's printed on it, or it's part of the wrap that's on the skate, the graphic.
Oh my God.
Look at these babies. These kids are... When these kids open up the box and like see these wheels, they're gonna lose their mind. These beautiful, I love it.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
That's there, Germany, yes,
yeah,
Russia, Czech Republic, Switzerland. Look, so yeah, and hell, you know, even a team like Switzerland, like I want to see Marco Rossi and a bunch of do his best with no help, but it'll be interesting, man.
Yeah, I mean, those teams are fun to watch though too when they only have real like one real bona fide superstar. You know, even like Germany, watching Stutzel, you can tell he was literally the best player on his team by a long shot, and it was so good and so dominant.
And listen, you'll have Stutzel, you'll have Reichel, you'll have Peterka, so that line can definitely do damage. Or if they get split up, and
they're contending with that line, it's crazy.
And that's the best, is that you watch, you know, whether it was the Olympics, you watch Team Norway get dummied, but there's this little guy named Matt Zuccarello who, whenever he's on the ice, is like insane by himself. But, you know, and that's the thing, that you that's when you get glimpses of these guys, you're like, oh, there's a, you know, there's something here, you know, and it's great seeing that happen. So I'm excited. I love just watching hockey. I've had delayed gratification with the NHL season, but I know that because they're going to bubble, I have proof of concept that the Alberta bubble will hold. Hopefully no kid does anything stupid in this tournament, should be able to go unimpeded. So Christmas Day, you know, especially if you can't be with your loved ones for whatever reason due to this current circumstances, you can at least sit down your Christmas morning, open your presents, and then, you know, at noon you're gonna have like leftovers and watch the World Juniors. Oh man, there's no better feeling, you know. Absolutely. That World Juniors is feels like Christmas to me. So it's the most wonderful time of the year, World Junior time.
Yeah, joy to the World Junior Championships 2021.
Thank you for listening to the Broadway Boys Podcast. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Broadway Boys Pod, and please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, or thehockeypodcastnetwork.com.
You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network on Twitter at HockeyPodNet. New episodes every Monday and Thursday. Download at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.